Hello, everyone. Welcome to Pod Tackler, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I am your host, Dust Storm.
I am your co-host, Godzilla T.
And we are back after a fantastic weekend for the Halo Championship Series, or at least I'm back with a few other fellow podcast hosts, some of which you guys probably heard from our Halo Bowl contest and tournament that we did a little while ago. So we have Tasman over from Bad Halo Show, and we also have Sergeant Bobcat on as well. Blanking on your podcast name for some reason.
Delta Halo. Come on, man. Delta Halo. That's best one out there.
Fail.
Sorry, work's been stressful. So we have them on tonight.
He's such a devoted follower.
Hey, I can only do so much. I don't even have time to play Halo. No, but we have both of them on. They were able to attend the Halo World Championship as well. So I got to meet them in person, which was awesome. And Tasman offered us to be on his show. We did a day two recap of the festivities that happened during that day and leading up to it through day one and day two. So figured it was a good idea to return the favor and have them on the show tonight to discuss some Halo World Championship results and just how our experience was over the weekend.
Yeah, I appreciate the invite. This is awesome. Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, man. I sent you a message when you asked me, and I was like, you know, you've made it in Halo when you're on Podtacular.
Much obliged. I appreciate it. You guys are doing well with your podcast, so it's only fair to have fellow podcasters on every now and then. We are happy to have you on, and especially talking about Halo World Championship Series, which was, I think it was a fantastic weekend. I thoroughly enjoyed it, enjoyed the action, enjoyed the venue, and everything there was fantastic. But we'll get to that in a little bit. First off, as we do with all of our new guests on the show, it's a little time for a little interview. So we'll go ahead and start with Tasman. First of all, tell us how you first got involved with Halo. What was that kind of first interest that you got hooked in by for Halo, and kind of how you've gotten to where you are today?
I got into Halo fairly late. I had moved, my wife and I, we weren't married yet at the time, but we moved out to Arizona in 2008. Didn't know anybody out here, just kind of went for broke. And one of my wife's friends, her husband actually introduced me to Halo. We were over at their house for a barbecue one night, and the kids went to bed. He had a nice, sweet little man cave kind of set up, and he threw in Halo, tossed me a controller, and said, "Here we go." And I kind of looked at him. I said, "Well, what's this?" And the look he gave me was just complete and utter shock that I'd never played Halo before. So he turned off the game, put a copy of Halo CE in my hand, and basically said, "Get out of my house until you play this." So that was my introduction to Halo. It was kind of by fire and by force.
Talk about a sink or swim feeling. Jeez.
Yeah. Especially in Halo 3. Yeah. So I played Halo CE campaign and absolutely loved it. I played through it all in that one night. I don't think I slept at all. A very interesting time when you first are introduced to Flood at 3 o'clock in the morning. With all the lights out, too, by the way. That was an interesting experience. But I finished that, took it back to my friend. He gave me Halo 2 and said, "Go play that, and then you can come back." So I at least got the CE and 2 campaigns done. And then I was kind of off and running on Halo 3 on my own. And I've been a fan of Halo ever since. I've played every game ever since. Just thoroughly enjoyed it. And this might generate a lot of heat for me, but whatever. My enjoyment of Halo seems to have gotten better from 3 on. I spent more time on Halo in Reach than I did in 3. I spent more time on Halo 4 than I did in Reach. And now with Halo 5, I don't think I've ever had a game in the console on a consistent basis as much as I have for Halo 5. That's at least my introduction to Halo. Getting into podcasting, I actually started a podcast during Halo Reach. I still do, but at the time I was listening to this little known Halo podcast called Podtacular, and there was a particular co-host on there I didn't really care for. I just didn't like what his vision was for where Halo should be with Reach, and I really enjoyed Reach, so I kind of wanted to get my voice out there, not necessarily to counter, but just to say, hey, there's a voice out here that likes it too. It didn't last very long. Consistency is important. And when I started losing consistency, suddenly it was a couple weeks between episodes and a couple months, and then all of a sudden it was 5 years. So I kind of kicked back up into the podcasting thing after you guys actually did the first Halo Bowl. And that was kind of, for me, it was like, okay, either do this that you've been talking about doing again for years, or don't. Kind of the do your business or get off the pot, so to speak. So started with episode number one. It's going to be up on 31 weeks now. Haven't missed a week. So that's where the Bad at Halo show kind of evolved from.
That's awesome. Yeah, I know exactly who you're talking about too, unfortunately. I mean, it's part of our history, part of kind of how podcasts go when you've been around, and I'm not trying to brag or anything, but being around for 11 years, people come and go, people's opinions change, people have different opinions. I mean, it's been crazy that I've been doing this podcast for 8.5 years on my own. So it's definitely one of those understandable things. There were some people who have, and I mean, every community has this, I think, as far as gaming goes, where iterations of the game, people either really enjoy or really dislike, at least from the vocal side of things. So you're always going to have that dichotomy of people. It's kind of humbling to hear that your podcast was kind of kickstarted with listening to ours. So really appreciate that.
Yeah, no, I mean,
it's good that.
Yeah, I mean
like you said, kind of that consistency is hard, and yeah, it's the absolutely. Key to doing the podcast.
Yeah, no, you were kind of an inspiration as far as, you know, hey, you know, if you put the time and effort and doing it, and you just do what you love to do, you know, who knows what happens out of it. So that was kind of cool. But yeah, the consistency thing for me, it was unfortunately during a lot of time in my life, there was just a lot of moving around. We didn't really stay in one spot, even within Arizona, for very long. So continuously moving setups and stuff like that. And then I got a 9-to-5 job, and then all of a sudden I became a dad. So there was a lot of stuff that kind of happened in the interim. But, you know, I have a lot of fun doing this. My podcast, I do it on my own, which is a blessing and a curse sometimes. But yeah, no, it's been a lot of fun, and hope to keep doing it for a while longer.
That's awesome. Bobcat, same questions to you. How you got started in Halo, and how did you get to where you are now?
So I started back in, I think I started Halo CE. I didn't have an Xbox at the time. I was always a PlayStation guy. And one of my buddies back home got an Xbox, got Halo, and he had us over. He had me, Kat, Maddie. We all went over. All my co-hosts from Delta Halo. We all went over, and we were just messing around, running around, throwing stickies on Warthogs, throwing stickies. I don't even know why, but that's what we did. And it was just a ton of fun doing that. And that was kind of the start to it. I didn't get too invested in the first game. And then once Halo 2 came out, we had a pretty typical experience hauling CRT TVs and our Xboxes around and loading into someone's bedroom and, you know, just having 3-4 TVs set up and playing just big games of Halo all night. And that's pretty much where we got hooked. And when we finally got high-speed internet and had the chance to go online and actually test our skills out against other people, that was an absolute revelation. That was unbelievable. What an unbelievable experience, being able to just hop on and play other people across the country and across the world, honestly. And that's pretty much what got me started. That was insane. And me, Maddie, Kat, we've been together since the beginning. We went to middle school, high school together, played Halo all through college. And once Halo 5 came out, we were super stoked for it. And we talk about Halo every single week, every single day together. And we said, why don't we actually be a part of the community, create something that we can share and get people to unite around. And we've always loved to play the game competitively, although we've never been to any events. We always like that side of the game. It's always hop in, load up the new game, go play multiplayer. We rarely touch campaign. I'm probably the only one out of us that will go play the campaign and I enjoy it, but we always just hop in and we just run matchmaking all the time. And it was just a kind of one of those things where we started doing it every single week. And, you know, now we're on episode 67, 2 Halo Bowls under our belt, going out to the Halo World Championships. It's just kind of organically growing into something that's been just ton of fun. Such an amazing learning experience. Our Discord server's been active since we started it up. We have such a great community. You know, being out in California for the World Championships, I actually stayed with one of our listeners and met up with another guy who drove up from Arizona. I mean, it's just been really, really cool being able to see people uniting around kind of content that we're putting out there. I think that's been the coolest thing about it, being able to get the chance to meet you guys. I mean, the opportunity to go to the World Championship, everything has just been really cool, exceeded so many of my expectations. And it's really fun to be just a part of the community and being active and contributing. And that's pretty much my story, I guess. I started rambling a bit, but it's just been a ton of fun to do it.
You can tell we're in the presence of a lot of podcasters here right now. Seems like a lot of podcasters have very similar backstories as far as starting the podcast and how it's just kind of grown with the community aspect of things, which is just really cool to see. And thank you guys for being on and doing what you do and being a part of the small little podcasting community that we have going on in the greater Halo community.
Absolutely.
So we want to knock out a couple of news things before we dive into our little Halo World Champion discussions. And later on at the end of this podcast, we'll tack on the three different interviews that we had going on over the weekend, which are actually up on our website now. I actually took the time to turn those around really quickly when I was out there. So we had an interview with Elam Knight, who's the coach of Evil Geniuses. Or sorry, not Evil Geniuses, Envious, Team Envious. Then we also had an interview with the Straight Rippin' team. And then we also had an interview with Royal One from Optic Gaming. So you can find those on the website right now, or you can listen to it at the end of this podcast where we'll tack it on. Speaking of HCS, though, they announced the next event literally minutes before we started recording this podcast, and it's going to be UMG Daytona. It's going to be a $75,000 tournament for the 4v4, and there's going to be a $5,000 FFA tournament as well. It's going to take place on May 12th through the 14th at the Ocean Center Arena in Daytona Beach, Florida. So, Biowolf, if you're listening, you can go on over there. Passes go on sale on Friday, aka tomorrow, as of when we're recording this, on March 31st at 5 p.m. Pacific time. 4v4 passes are $200 for early bird special, and then $250 standard price after April 9th, and then FFA passes are $25 to enter. And then they have viewer tickets as well. $25 for single day, $30 for 3 day, and then VIP is $150. It'll be broadcasted on Beam and Twitch on the official Halo channels. So if you can't get enough HCS goodness, or if you couldn't make it over to the West Coast for the Halo World Championship Series and you're looking for something in Florida, then just wait a month and a half, and then you'll have UMG Daytona. I don't think this is part of any set, like, circuit or anything. It is part of just the Pro League and Open circuit. I don't think this is any kind of, like, official season event yet, or at least it doesn't seem like it's quite that way, but that's the next event.
It's interesting that it's, they've announced, I mean, maybe this is just the cadence, and this is just as quickly as they could plan this event and lock it down. But it's interesting. It's a month and a half away, and good luck scrambling to get travel plans and things locked down in that short amount of time. It's tough. It's tough to have not much time to be able to plan and pull those things together. A lot of people, especially younger folks, not necessarily going to have the money to go out and watch their teams compete or even get a team together and go play. It's a little tough. I love the fact that they're bringing an event to the East Coast, and it's an open event, and you can be a part of it. And I absolutely love the more that they think about these things and the more that they create and host, it's only a good thing for the scene, obviously, but just like a little bit more time to plan.
So I don't think the Halo World Championship was announced at least more than 2 months out. I think it was like within 2 months or a month and a half that the location for Worlds was announced. and tickets went on sale. I don't think this is that odd. Or this,
I don't think it's out of place. It's not a deviation from the current standard, but the current standard isn't necessarily a good thing.
True.
Exactly. And I mean, we'll get into all that later on too, but you know, they did say that they were going to, I mean, that's why they didn't use any crowdfunding this year for Worlds. They wanted to take that crowdfunding money and put that towards more live open events. So maybe that's, you know, this is kind of the kickstart for that. But yeah, I mean, a month and a half out, yeah, good luck getting people. You know, you're not going to get people from the West Coast now. You might get people from the East, but like Bobcat was saying, getting out to an event, it's not an easy deal. I mean, time off work or school, getting flights. When you wait till last minute to get flights, flights can get pretty expensive, not to mention hotels and stuff like that too. So I just wish they would kind of have these mapped out a little bit more in advance, be able to announce them a little bit more in advance, allow your fan base to plan around it, because you know, while you know Twitch viewership and stuff is pretty good, you want to have people there live, and that's tough to do when you're not giving people a lot of notice.
Agreed. It's not the MLG days anymore, unfortunately, and that's seems like what a lot of people were really commenting on over this past week. But we'll get to that here in a little bit after we get to the news and all the drama that was behind that this weekend. The Halo World Championship this year brought in a lot of unique viewers with the help of being broadcasted on Twitter. So this was the first Halo event that was live streamed on Twitter, which brought in a lot of views. Now, granted, I kind of understand where they're pulling numbers together for like how many unique viewers there were, but for people just randomly scrolling through Twitter and they're counting those viewers, kind of is like, doesn't really count.
It definitely inflates that number. And I'm glad you brought it up, because that was like the first thing I thought of when I saw it. I was like, man, awesome, huge number. That's like a great headline. But at the same time, if 50% or more watch for 5 seconds, who cares?
I think the concurrent viewers shows a little bit more of an accurate story. Granted, it's still a little skewed, I think, but there was 135,000 concurrent viewers across Twitch, Twitter, Facebook, and Beam. So concurrent viewers, that means at any given time, the most that it was over the weekend was 135,000, which since 343 has, or I guess technically since HCS has been doing Halo Esports, not MLG, or some of the other organizations that was kind of in between MLG and HCS, that's the biggest concurrent view count that we've had in Halo Esports. That's not something to shrug at. That's a great accomplishment. Just the whole 13 million unique viewers is definitely not a good number.
It's easy to spin the numbers in your favor a little bit, but I do agree that concurrent number is fantastic. I mean, I think the grand finals on Twitch, just Twitch alone, topped out around 70,000 or so. So that's 68, you know, 60,
I think.
68, yeah. So then you got, you know, 62,000 coming from all those other channels. I think that's awesome. That's a great accomplishment. The more distribution you can get, the more you can get in front of people that don't watch on Twitch, the better Halo is going to be in the long run.
Yeah, it seems like Facebook is kind of the next leading edge as far as the live streaming goes. And then being Microsoft's platform, hopefully it'll be something that gets a little more traction down the road. And it was interesting that they dropped YouTube as well this year.
Yeah, it's kind of sad because I can't watch Twitch or Beam at work.
I can't watch any of them at work.
What about Facebook, though?
I don't do Facebook. I literally don't have a Facebook account.
That's probably for the best. I'm using it less and less, honestly.
I wonder if you have to be logged in to view their page. Maybe you do.
I don't know. I just don't go to Facebook.
Fair enough.
It's a personal choice with all the information that is available with a Facebook account. I just choose not to do that.
Smart man.
Hey, now ISPs can sell all our data. It's great.
Yeah, so why even bother? Before it was just Facebook can do it. Now it's Verizon, Comcast, Time Warner.
Yeah, I think I would prefer it to be illegal for anybody to do that without your permission.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, let's stick out of the politics for now. Speaking of that one guest host.
Oh, this isn't Politictacular? I thought, I must be on the wrong show.
Politicular? Oh, there we go.
Politictacular?
No. That's too close to another word.
The stream numbers are definitely nothing to shrug at. And it's awesome to see that Twitter hosted the stream live on their platform. So that was kind of cool. But the whole 13 million unique viewers, yeah, I'm not buying that. Because that's like whenever someone opens up Twitter webpage, or the Twitter app, it's like, oh, I got a unique viewer. It's like, that doesn't count.
Yeah, I'm curious how they measured that. Is it 5 seconds, 10 seconds? You know, what qualifies as an actual viewer? You know, is it screens in full view? I'm just curious how they're calculating that, because if it's just open up Twitter, like you said, and pop in and then scroll past it, like, that's nuts.
It's probably like if any amount of time of the stream was viewed by a user, it counted. I bet that's how it worked.
Let's take it with a grain of salt then.
That's what I'm saying. Other piece of news that we have is that Warzone Turbo and Warzone Warlords are making a return.
Yay!
When did we bring this up, GT? A couple weeks ago? 3 weeks ago? Something like that?
3-4, something like that.
So Turbo comes out tomorrow, which is Friday, which is awesome. I'm excited for that. I have a bunch of random wrecks and other things to play around with and get rid of. Now, Unicheck didn't say how long Warzone Turbo would be here. Hopefully it's
the weekend.
Okay. He didn't specify in here, so I guess I'll take your word for that.
I'm just guessing.
I mean, you're probably right. Which kind of sucks, because my weekend is pretty much taken by having to go to a wedding.
How dare people celebrate meeting each other and spending their lives together during your weekend of Warzone Turbo. Oh, so selfish.
I won my Warzone. Yeah.
Must play Warzone.
And it's Turbo. Like, it's fun. And then Warlords is either going to be April 14th or April 21st. They're still trying to figure out when exactly they're going to do that.
My entire Spartan company leapt with joy when they heard that. They love the 12-man team run, so I'm sure they're all very happy about it, but then they're also all very upset about it, because they know as soon as it will be there, it will be gone again as well.
Well, I guess I'm not surprised because of the whole playlist population thing, but I would think Warzone Warlords, at least, would try to lean towards making a permanent playlist. Turbo, I could see them like putting it there for a weekend and then taking it away. But Warlords, that was the original Warzone experience. Why not make an effort to take it back there?
I think the Warzone Warlords playlist will be a permanent playlist when they get it tuned. Like I said, they put it out there this last time for a test. To test to see how the playlist worked. And, you know, they pulled it down to make some adjustments. I really do think that it will become a permanent playlist once they work the kinks out.
To celebrate the Warzone Turbo and Warzone Warlords, 343 is going to be having community play dates for each of those. The one for Turbo is going to be tomorrow or Friday, March 31st at 2 p.m. Pacific time. And I would assume whatever they do for Warlords, they'll probably do the same time. So if it's going to be April 14th, then they'll probably do that on April 14th at 2 o'clock. Or if it's the 21st, April 21st at 2 o'clock Pacific time.
I will never get that unicorn ice skin. I am always at work when they do these. So
I will not be.
Unless I call out. I
probably will not be there this weekend. Yeah. Just got to get home early enough.
Oh, no. By the time they, because it's only for an hour, right? So they only do it from like 2 to 3. I don't even get out of work until
sometimes
4:30 Pacific.
Sometimes it can be 2 hours.
Well, it's a 40-minute drive home. I'm just SOL, and I've learned to accept that.
That sucks.
Same here. I won't get off to work until, well, let's see, that would be 4 o'clock Pacific time. So I'm sure it'll be over by the time I get home.
Wah-wah. And you have to get in matched with them. It's not even anything where you're guaranteed to get it if you're playing on that at that time.
Well, Bobcat, you're the only one left. You've got to win the lottery for us.
I'll pick up the slack, guys.
Thanks. We'll give you our account info. Right. Okay, so on to a little bit of stuff from this weekend. So all of us, minus GT, were at the Halo World Championship this weekend in Burbank, California, or sunny Burbank, California, as Grim said on his recap videos. And there was a little bit of controversy over the venue. I think some people may have seen some Kotaku article or some other Twitter stuff about people boycotting it or whatever. Yeah, that's a whole bunch of malarkey. People were cherry picking images and stories. And granted, there were some things out there that are legitimate, not concerns, but I guess issues that people had with how the tournament was, or how the tournament location was chosen, being at ESL Studios. I think for me, since I'd been at ESL before, I kind of had a certain expectation of having a studio setting instead of a more traditional venue style setting like we had for Worlds last year, or for any of the open tournaments, or what we've had for MLG in the past. So I think people's expectations were not properly, what's the word I'm looking for? Set up properly. You guys know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, I mean, expectations weren't properly set. I think everyone had a bit of a vision in their mind being that this is the second Worlds. And even if people haven't been to the ESL studio, it makes it really difficult to know what that place is all about. But it's one of the things, like, it's hard for me to complain about it because I thought the experience that they put together was fantastic. I thought they did a really nice job of really immersing people within Halo in the main stage, outside, in all of the other tents. But at the same time, the fact that they sold tickets to come watch an event, but then people were turned away and had to watch in a tent, it's a shame. I mean, yes, the experience out there was great. They did a fantastic job on Sunday of making those who were outside for all of those matches to have a really good time, and they gave away tons of swag, and that's fantastic. But ideally, everyone could have been inside, being a part of that atmosphere, really just being a part of that energy, which is really infectious. It's really unique, and it makes you really love these types of events.
Well, that being part of that energy and that atmosphere, that's part of what you're paying for when you buy the ticket. I could sit at home and get hyped by myself sitting, you know, and watching on a TV screen. You know, I wanted to be there to be amongst the crowd, to get rowdy, to get loud, to shout hook and stuff like that. You know, that was part of what you're paying for. So when that's your expectation that I'm paying this money, I'm going to go and be part of this experience live, you're not expected to say, oh, we're full, and now you have to go out to this overflow tent and watch it on a TV screen, which I could have done at home for free.
Exactly. And part of the other thing, too, that at least I kind of wanted to point out with the whole Twitter stuff, too, is this isn't back in the days of MLG. It's not a traditional venue, which, I mean, yeah, people want to see something that has been more like the open lands and that kind of stuff. But it didn't even sell out. Like back in the MLG days, you would sell out those tickets. And I think last year sold out. But this year, like the week leading up to it, Friday and Saturday tickets were still available. And this whole idea of people expecting 343 to have a premier venue for Worlds, if people aren't even going to completely sell out a studio which has limited seating and limited availability, then why would they go invest in another venue that would cost them 3, 4, 5 times more?
Sorry, while I agree with you on that, I think that makes total sense. You know, you need to have some sort of benchmark and understand how much demand there is for these tickets. I'm glad that they didn't sell out, because those poor people that would have bought those tickets wouldn't have been able to go in and watch the matches.
Well, but I also think, though, is that part of the announcement of the venue you're going to be at is part of creating the demand as well. And, you know, I know I talked about it on my show. I know Bobcat talked about it on his show. Part of your sales pitch to people to come out is, hey, come check it out, because not only do we have exceptional Halo and stuff like that, but look at this huge place that we're going to be at, and look how awesome it is, and look how prestigious it is. You know, that's part of the pitch for the marketing. And so when, and
people that are hardcore, you know, into the competitive side, they know what ESL Studios is. They know what it looks like. And when you make that announcement that that's what you're going to be, I don't necessarily think that it didn't sell out because people weren't interested. I think it didn't sell out because people are like, why bother? Go to that place. And when, you know, it's not a spectacle. I know, you know, I talked about that before on my show is about, you know, make it a spectacle, make it something that people want to go to. And I really think they seriously undersold that. But, you know, that being said, like Bobcat said earlier, you're immersed in all these people. I mean, we had media credentials to do interviews with people. I wouldn't have needed it if I didn't have it. I mean, I'm glad I did have media credentials. It was a lot of fun to be able to just kind of walk around, you know, seemingly at will and be able to do stuff. But as with a 3-day pass, like I initially had, I easily could have gotten interviews with the people that I did. I mean, you had pro players everywhere. You had casters everywhere. People from 343 were everywhere. Heck, Kiki Wolfkill on Sunday, she was in that overflow tent, I think, the entire day, just kind of hanging out and chilling out. So that experience, I think the balance there is if you get a large venue, some of that might be gone. So, you know, you got to find a nice little balance. But I think you go with the old, you know, if you build it, they will come. And if you give them a large, prestigious arena, you know, people will come out.
Yeah. And another part of that, too, being it is the studio, it is not as glamorous, which I can definitely agree with that part. And I think another issue that we kind of hinted at a little bit earlier before we got into the new stuff, but just the fact that it was only announced, and a lot of these events are only being announced a month and a half or 2 months in advance, where weren't the MLG events announced like 3 or 4 months in advance? Something like that?
I'm not sure. I don't remember, to be honest.
Well, ask anybody that's been around for a while and they'll say yes, because it's defending MLG.
Well, I've been around for a while. My first event was MLG Dallas 2007, 2008. It's just been a while since MLG has hosted Halo that I don't remember. I don't know. I can see where people were upset with the venue and how 343 didn't choose to go with a big open venue like we had last year for, but even last year, it was a production studio. Granted, it was a little bit bigger space and the production was a little bit bigger, but the amount of people that were able to go was not that much more than what was able to be at the ESL studios. And for someone that was there when ESL hosted the very first Halo event back in, I think it was November of 2014, the production quality came a very long way at the studio. The stages were awesome. The setup was great for the caster desk, the analyst desk, the teleanalyst area. Like the whole production room was really well done. And another part was people were complaining about were the tents and how it didn't look great. It's a studio block in California
in a residential neighborhood.
Right.
I will say the production, as you mentioned, was incredible this time. Every single event that they've been doing, they've been getting better each time. And the Worlds was definitely their peak so far. And the fact that they were ahead of schedule many of the days, the fact that they had two technical glitches, but if it weren't for those, they probably would have finished early. And the content in between matches was less repetitive. It was much more fresh, much more engaging. The ways they were able to review plays, the ways they were able to give casters their time to share their knowledge and experience in playing Halo. I think they did such an amazing job actually showing that, showing those matches this weekend. I thought they just did a really nice job. And that makes me really excited because that's where you're going to see the majority of the people. And if those 13 million people did actually watch, they got a good stream.
Exactly. Next year, hopefully we'll have a better venue for Worlds. I would kind of imagine that after the backlash of the community not being very happy with the venue choice, they'll choose to do something a little bit better.
Are we going to do Frank O'Connor's Reddit post later?
I don't even know about this.
Okay, I can save that for the end. He basically went on Reddit and addressed some of the concerns he had heard in person throughout the weekend, since he was roaming around as well. So I've got a screenshot of it. Actually, I can send it to you if you want.
Okay. I mean, you can talk to it if you want to.
Oh, I mean, I can. I think we can do it maybe at the end. I mean, it's kind of a summation of a lot of the concerns that were brought up.
I mean, I figure since we're on the topic now, if you just want to kind of go over it now, it'd probably be appropriate.
Okay. Do you want me to read it, or do you just kind of want me to summarize it?
Just summarize it.
Okay. So basically, it was listed as an apology. I don't think it was so much an apology, so much as we've heard you, we've heard your concerns, we've heard your constructive criticism. I think he was being very liberal with that. But
yes, of course.
It was a lot of the, we've heard you, we will do better, and we want to make a good experience for the people that come out to these events and support Halo. So, I mean, in summary, that's basically what it was. And, you know, there were some people that are like, okay, you know, that's good. That's great that they've said that. And really, at this point, that's all he can do. I mean, he can't go out and organize an event tomorrow to say, hey, look, this is how we're going to do better. You know, he can just say, you know, we've heard you and we're going to do better. And now it's kind of, for everybody else, it's just kind of a wait and see. Okay, are they going to do better, or is this just something to quell the immediate storm that happened after? So I'm encouraged by it, and we know that Microsoft is capable of doing some stuff. I saw the pictures for the Gears World Championships that are in Atlantic City this upcoming weekend, so I kind of retweeted that out and said, okay, you know, this is the bar. So if we're going to do better, you know, if we're going to compete. And I think that that's something that ESL, MLG, some of these guys aren't really doing. I don't really think they're trying to compete with each other, and I think they should. This is, you know, this is kind of the bar that's being set. So we'll kind of see what they do going forward. But there was an acknowledgement by Frank O'Connor on Reddit that, hey, you know, we heard you, and we're going to work on it to make it better.
The acknowledgement is nice. I think the big thing is going to be, because I honestly don't know that much about other first-person shooter esports communities and what the dynamics like there, but I know Halo esports, or the Halo community in general, has been very toxic since 343 has taken over, and I don't know if that's part of the whole.
Since when?
Yeah, I said it.
When did that happen?
I said it.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I said
about.
It. So I don't know if that has a little bit of a role to play with the, I guess, popularity or the community backing behind something like HCS.
Oh, I'm sure it does. And I think, you know, I think the fact that, you know, I would wonder what the reaction would be like if the letters on the building of the venue said MLG instead of ESL, if we would have gotten the same reaction as well. Because I think that there are some out there that, so long as it's anything other than MLG, it'll be crap no matter what they do. So I definitely think there's a part of that that's out there as well.
It could be. There's a lot of dynamics behind there that we just don't know how it all fits together and what's actually causing what certain things. But getting back to just how for ESL being given the task to host the finals at their studio, I think they did a fantastic job. I don't think you can blame ESL for any lack of production or any lack of quality. The whole tents thing, I mean, you're trying to use open space, and ESL doesn't own that whole lot. There are other offices there that are using the space. So they were using the space that they could to accommodate the number of attendees that they were able to get there. And another part, too, with the whole thing of not everyone was able to fit in the studio, is there were fire marshals all over the place.
Yeah, there were.
There were a few times for some of the photographers where we were like sitting on the front rows, and ESL staff came over and was like, hey guys, make sure you're not lingering here too long because fire marshals are watching. So there were very strict on that. So there were reasons behind why there are only a certain number of people allowed in certain areas of the lot.
Sure. And they did what they could with the space that they had. Putting all those things together, they did a very good job. I mean, I think it could have been better. I think it could have been a better venue, but setting all of that stuff aside, I mean, I had a great time.
So, and at the end of the day, I mean, that's kind of what I was there for. I was there to have a good time and enjoy Halo. Mission accomplished. We'll set the bar higher for the next time.
Exactly.
And I think it was such a unique experience in that setting that, like you said earlier, Taz, you may not necessarily have needed a media pass in order to talk with the people you wanted to talk to. I mean, they were pros, coaches, casters, 343 people. Like, everyone there was just another person walking around enjoying the event. And they weren't behind a gated wall necessarily. They weren't, you know, sequestered off by themselves. People were walking out there, and you could walk up to anyone that you wanted. And as long as they wanted to talk to you, you could talk to them. It was a really unique experience. And I think that really made it for me. I mean, it brought everything kind of down to one level, and it was exciting. It was exciting to just be able to, you know, talk to whoever walked up.
Not to mention the merch tent and having the Boomco blasters to play with and the remote control warthogs and the jackrabbit. That was really cool. And they had the warthog there.
Yeah, I mean, they went all out with that type of stuff. I mean, the merch and swag, my God, that was... I probably came home with well over $100 worth of free stuff that they were just raffling off, giving off, making people happy. That warthog was so cool to see that there, and everyone was getting pumped, taking pictures with it and stuff. So I really enjoyed that touch.
Yeah, I think
they had 500 items that they gave away, something like that.
Bobcat's group came away with 400 of them.
Yeah, we had a raffle hawk. She was all over that. Every whatever it was, 30 minutes, hour that you could check. We were getting hooked up.
I got one thing all weekend. I think I won the least amount of stuff of everybody that attended. That's why I don't go to Vegas.
When I was flying back east, I was walking through the airport. I loaded up my suitcase and ended up having to check it because I got this really big, I don't even know what it was, like a customizable Spartan, and it was in this massive box. So I ended up having to carry it on walking through the airport with it. And so many people that I wouldn't have guessed to be Halo fans were coming up to me and asking me what it was. One guy was like, is that a Spartan 2 in there? And I was like, you really just asked me that? Like, that's sweet.
Yeah, that was the Kotobukiya armor set, I think, that you got.
Yeah, I think
so.
The
only Halo 5 Spartan with a black undersuit. Bobcat's got it.
Right.
Oh, geez. I walked away with a t-shirt and one of the mega construct sets.
Oh, you got the
nothing too big.
You got the flamethrower one. I remember you showed me that.
No, it wasn't the flamethrower one. I got the one that wasn't the flamethrower one.
You talked about like being able to walk up and like meet people from the community. Dustin, did you tell GT what I said to you when I first met you?
No, I didn't.
So GT,
you can tell him if you want,
and everybody listening. So I've never.
Holy crap! You're tall.
Oh. Actually, so I pulled the very famous line from Halo 4. I looked at Dustin and I said, "I thought you'd be taller." Dustin's like, "Really? Yep. Really? That's what you're gonna say?
That's your opening line?"
I'm sorry. My expectation, much like the venue, my expectation was like that you were like 8 feet tall, because I've seen pictures. I think Unicracken showed me a picture of you and him. So it's either you were really super tall or Unicracken's really super short. So now I know it's Unicracken's really super short.
Or just the combination of the two.
But no, that was...
Well, you know, if you ever wanted a good gauge of his height, his old profile picture was standing next to Master Chief.
Well, and you're sitting pretty comfortably in that Warthog too, and they say when they drive it, they actually have to stand because it's to scale, right?
Yeah, that one is. I could actually see over the dash, and it was about maybe 20
actually,
feet
actually
in front of me.
When they drive it, they kind of sit on the door.
Yeah.
Or where the door would be.
But yeah, that was one of my big takeaways. So if anyone hasn't seen it yet, my new Twitter profile picture and Facebook profile picture, and as soon as I get to everything else, profile picture, which I just realized I need to update my Discord, is me sitting in the Warthog.
Yeah, my son did not want to get into it. He wanted to see it, and then, which, by the way, this was also really cool, and I hope I don't get this guy in trouble, but my wife and son were in California with me. They didn't go to the Halo event themselves, but they went to go and pick me up on Sunday after everything was over,
And the security guard out front was asking him, hey, what are you guys here for? And they said, oh, we're just here to pick him up. He gave them both a couple badges and let them in. So my son got to kind of walk around a little bit too, and was in awe of all the Halo stuff. The people from the 405th that were there, he was a little intimidated by them at first, but once dad gave one of them a high five, he was all about it. And we got a picture with those guys. Those guys were super cool. And I mean that figuratively, literally. I'm sure they were absolutely roasting in those suits, but that was really cool. My son got to meet Grim, and I made sure to tell Grim his nickname too, to maybe, hey, Grim, might want to put him in canon. Just, you know, why not? But yeah, no, that was really cool. Got autographs from Kiki Wolfkill and Frank O'Connor and Sketch and everybody that was there giving out autographs. So, I mean, even for the little bit of time that he was in there, he had a blast. And, you know, thank you to that guy that just kind of let them go in and wander around after everything had been over. That was cool.
That's awesome. The 405th guys actually said the weather there was not that bad. They were actually doing pretty fine. Believe it or not, for California, I guess. And it was low 70s the entire weekend. It was actually very nice.
No, that means it was only 105 inside those costumes.
Well, supposedly it wasn't that bad. I did get a chance to take some pictures. I was their kind of pseudo handler for the couple of days that they were there. So I took a few pictures with them around the Warthog and some inside the studio and a couple other like singles picture. So that was a lot of fun to see them and be able to hang out with them for a bit. And I got to hang out with Ben, who's the XO for the Pacific Division. I got to hang out with him on Sunday night. So that was cool. And yeah, let's see what else was there. There was the whole player and media tent, which we did our interviews and we did the podcast, the Bad Dad Halo podcast. That was the day two wrap up. I also got to buy some team merch for people that were there. And then the food trucks were actually really good. I know that's one of those.
I mean, like I got some food from, I think I just got food the one day, Saturday, from the Vietnamese truck. It was freaking delicious.
I think I had a burger at least once every day.
I don't blame you.
I got the carne asada fries, and I think I was set for the weekend.
Nice. There were extra staff tickets floating around, so I had one free meal on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, actually, just from like random staff tickets on the ground. I'm like, okay, cool, I'll take it. And for when we were back in the player tent, like at the end of the day, they would have extra food. So they would just offer it to anyone that was in the player or media tent. It's like, hey, you want some free food? I'm like, yeah, I'll take free food. I think this is the one Halo event where I've gotten the most free food.
You can't turn it down if it's being offered up.
Heck no.
I was swiping Red Bulls out of the player tent all weekend.
Hey, they're there and they're open for the taking, so might as well, right?
I waited till I saw some of the family members swiping some, and I was like, all right, nobody's really like saying, hey, are you a player? And so I was like, all right, I'm thirsty, I'll run over, I'll grab one, like I know what I'm doing, and nobody said anything.
I just asked, like, are these open? And they said, yep. So I just started going at the waters and the snacks and all that stuff. All right. Let's move on to the actual competition that happened between all the pro teams.
Well, what? They played Halo?
Yeah.
Oh.
Funny enough, at a Halo event, they play Halo.
How about that?
Who'd have thought? I know. So unfortunately, this time around, all the international teams were the first to get knocked out, which sucked.
But like I think, like you said during the wrap up, expected.
Yeah, not to be not expected, but at the same time, and Hines from Straight Rippin', he brought this up when I interviewed him, and it's a very good point where the international teams don't have the exposure and the ability to play against the A teams in the Americas, so they're at a disadvantage. Now, granted, we saw one of the European teams last year placed in the top eight of HCS. But this year, all the international teams got wiped out. And there are a few of them where, like, watching them online, they were pretty good. They could put up their stuff. And FOB Esports had a few good games, but compared to the U.S. teams, they just don't have the ability to practice on the caliber that the North American teams do. And even talking even talking to Team Immunity, who's the Australian teams, they said that there's no organized esports league for Halo there, so they can't actually practice or hold tournaments. So the only there's the ceiling for them to get better, or the ceiling for them to actually play and develop tactics, is a lot lower than it is for the North American teams, because the North American teams, it's been MLG or that's been around since 2002 for Halo, and a lot of these players have been playing for 10 plus years, whereas for the international teams, these organizations haven't been around for maybe more than 4 or 5.
Well, and I was talking to the Immunity's coach on Friday, and he was just talking about, you know, NA, EU, they have set pro leagues. They keep going after Worlds. They said for them, you know, when there was no formal announcement for anything, and they didn't really have anything to play for, everything just kind of fell apart. And then Worlds is announced, and then all of a sudden everybody's like, whoa, hey, we need to get back together and organized again. You know, they've just lost 6-7 months of playtime, of really competitive playtime to, you know, North America, EU. It's like, you know, they almost felt like, yeah, it's just lambs at the slaughter for us. Soar Gaming, I talked to Lestat, and he was saying the same thing. So, but they're working on stuff too. I actually saw some stuff on Twitter. It looks like they're organizing their own pro leagues now to maybe hopefully try to combat in next year, 2018. Maybe, you know, they don't just get first rounded right away.
One can hope, one can dream.
Well, I think it would just be good. I mean, if we're going to have Halo be a global brand, I mean, you can't just have one region of the world dominate the game. It doesn't generate interest in other parts of the world. So, you know, it would be nice to have had Fab Esports place top 4, you know, and be able to go back to the UK and Europe with that. And, you know, maybe some kid sees that and they say, hey, I want to be able to do that too. And, you know, those are the sparks that you need for growth. And, you know, so, you know, there needs to be some time and investment, you know, whether that's Microsoft, whether that's 343, whether it's ESL, in developing some of these other regions. It's just good competitive Halo globally is just good for the game globally, period.
It's difficult to it's difficult for these regions to have these things, because without having a league, even if you just have some tournaments, it's impossible to make a living doing that. And it's impossible if you're making a living on a side job doing so part time. You're never going to be as good as the guys that are playing it full time in the NA, making enough money to support themselves. Yeah, there's a lot of people that still can't, but maybe there's some kids that are, you know, in college or younger that, you know, Shotzi probably doesn't need a job right now. So there's a lot of benefits to being able to have those leagues. Just aside from playing higher skill levels, you actually are being able to survive financially by having those leagues. Maybe you have salary through your organization. You have more dependable schedule for events where you're able to compete and actually make money. There's just, I think, so many benefits that it just becomes so difficult for anyone that doesn't have that type of support structure to compete with those who do.
Is Shotzi old enough to have a job?
Probably not.
Or Frosty. He's what, 17?
Frosty's a little bit older, yeah.
Something not like much. That. He was dishing out some disrespect during that finals. Jeez.
Body disrespect. Gotta love it.
I mean, the teabagging thing, for me personally, the teabagging thing, that's a Halo staple. So it's like, okay, that makes sense. But the whole shooting the Envy logo, that to me was a little much.
Yeah, that didn't impress me at all.
It was funny. I don't know. At first I was like, oh, that's a new one. And then after reflecting on it, I was just like, you know what? I don't know. Unless there's like some sort of ill intent behind doing that, then I don't know. I don't really have an issue with it. It's one of those things where maybe at some point it could grow that part that go to a point where people can start taking offense to that. But like you were saying, Taz, with was it T.O. out on the Dallas Cowboys logo, you know, players talking about not having their logo on the floors in hockey NHL hockey rooms locker rooms stepped on, I just don't think we're at that point where you can get too hurt by that one. And maybe if you own the organization, it's like, come on, like have it show a little respect. But other than that, it's one of those things that as long as, you know, you're not getting that vulgarity and saying these kids are, you know, effing terrible on stream, then go ahead, body disrespect, do whatever you need to do that makes you happy. And we can just take it as a little bit of a joke and move on.
Yeah, no, Frosty already did that last year with Allegiance. They caught him on stream saying that. I do remember that.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, that was like one of our first episodes. And that was one of those things where it's like, that's a little bit over the line. You know, you start doing listen-ins, you're getting vulgarity, you'll start pushing away those types of people that aren't really hardcore into the sport and understand what's going on. You'll start to push away the kids that are watching, and maybe their parents walk in and catch whatever, you know, is being said. And, you know, it's a bit of a turnoff from that standpoint. And I can totally understand that. That's tough. You know, there's a reason that people aren't doing that and going off on just TV. So that one, take a little bit of an exception to.
Fair enough. So I want to post a question out there, I guess. And this can go for the chat as well. Who was everyone's favorite team? Not necessarily favorite team to win, but who is everyone's favorite team, performance-wise or skill-wise or whatever? What was your favorite team from this weekend?
I think so. I got two. I'll try to narrow it down to one here. I'm a little partial going into it, just because I was a fan of Splice, just as an organization in general. The way they treat their players, the way they kind of conduct their business, what they're setting up as far as being partnered with the Boston Bruins. I just really love that how the organization is being structured right now and how they're treating their players. Also, it helps that we interviewed the Splice's coach leading up to Worlds. But I honestly just love the way that team is constructed with Boo Boo Shooter, Falcated, and Shotzi. I think that team is so incredibly exciting. I think we saw this weekend why they are so exciting and why they have so much potential. I mean, they got dropped down into the loser's bracket, battled back, took out Fabby, went up against Straight, took them to seven games. Straight ends up finishing the top four. I mean, they really had a great showing after running all the way through the LCQ the weekend before. And it's just their team that I'm really excited for moving forward and seeing how those players continue to develop and mesh with their chemistry. And I think they could, coming up in this next year, be able to contend with those top teams. I think they're almost there this year too, to be honest.
All right. So my favorite team throughout the weekend, I have two as well. And so I'm going to go with my heart on this one. And I'm going to say Straight Rippin'. I am a Straight Rippin' fan. I wasn't during the weekend being media, but you know, I am a Straight Rippin' fan. I was a big fan of Straight Rippin' coming back, picking up that org after all the crap that happened at the beginning of winter season to those guys. So as soon as Straight Rippin' came back and picked them up, I became a fan. And man, they just had two absolutely epic game seven series against Crowd Pleasers. And then in the brackets against Splice, they kind of became cardiac kids for T-Squared and Elamite.
I was going to say they were cheering for them whenever they were off duty.
Oh man, it was nuts. And I'm really mad at myself for missing that Straight and Crowd Pleasers game when Straight went up 3-0.
Geez.
When Straight went up 3-0, I packed up all my stuff. I was like, all right, I'll go work on some audio from the hotel room. I'll watch, you know, the last game on the phone in the shuttle to the parking lot. And as I'm sitting in the shuttle with Snakebite and Royal One, by the way, we're just all three of us are just sitting here just watching this comeback and watching that after that game six. I have that gif like on loop of Denoxide, Nated, and Kratos, and was it Showtime's our coach, of just giving the choke signal. Nated looks like he wants to murder somebody. Denoxide's just got like the 1,000-yard stare, like staring right
that
through
stare.
Ace.
Oh my gosh.
So awesome. So I was so mad, but and then for Straight Rippin' to come back in that game seven and come out with the victory, and then Ace, you know, doing the Spartan 4 thrust across stage to go get in Crowd Pleaser's face at the end of the series. Oh, it was so awesome. And then to do it again against Splice, a team that really, I mean, if they stick together, if that four, you know, that group of four stays together, man, they could do some damage. And I think eventually they can really compete with the Liquids and the Enviouses and Optics. But I went with my heart. I said straight ripping. There's another one I really wanted to say, but nah, I'm going to stick with my boys.
Okay. GT, did you watch it all this weekend?
No, I did not.
Okie dokie.
Again, I was.
It could have been 13 million and one. Way to go, GT.
Nah.
Yeah, it's all me.
So I kind of have two as well. First one being Envious, because I'm a Pistola fan and a Snipe Down fan. And I've actually gotten to know Elam Knight a little bit. We first met back in PAX East, actually, back in 2012, I think, yeah. During a Halo 4 Castle DLC Bad Cats event. So got to meet him there. And of course, wanting them to take down the Green Wall is something that I kind of wanted to see. Just so there wouldn't be like a repeat of CLG. Because the Optic Gaming Squad is basically CLG from last year, except for one person. But it would have been nice to see them win. A huge Pistola fan, huge Snipe Down fan. And then the other one was Crowd Pleasers, just because that Danoxide stare. And like you, as you were saying, Tasman, that gif, it is just, it's so priceless.
Oh, I do. I have it saved. Like, I can pull it up in an instant. Like, I almost play it now just to get hype before I go and play my own games of Halo 5, because it is just, I mean, whoever got that shot, you need to win a friggin' award, because that was perfect.
There was one of the other photographers there, and the GIF actually came from the third game that they won in the comeback. In the first game they won, Danoxide actually did the same thing, and the other photographer that was there, Danoxide actually looked straight at the photographer. So he got a straight on shot of that. So every game after that was just Danoxide would get up and just stare.
So good.
It was so good. It was great. That series between Straight and Crowd Pleasers was probably the most energetic series of the entire weekend.
And I was there and I missed it.
And the Crowd Pleasers fans are crazy.
That seems fitting, though.
You saw how crazy the Optic Gaming fans were on Sunday. No. The Crowd Pleasers fans were even more crazy.
I think the guys that make up that team, I think that's the kind of crowd that they draw in, though. I think they draw in a crowd of, I don't care, I'm going to be loud, I'm going to be obnoxious, I'm going to do what I'm going to do, and I'm going to cheer for my team, and that's just how it's going to be. I think the makeup of that team lends themselves to really rowdy fans like that, which, and I'm not knocking that at all. I think that's fantastic.
That stare is just, that was one of the defining moments of the weekend.
It became world famous real quick. I'm glad you said Envious, because that was my second team, and I'm going to assume, Sergeant, that was probably your second team too.
Yeah, good guess. It was
that 12-0 that 12-0 run on Saturday was just something of legend. That was just amazing.
That was incredible.
Well, 12-0 on Saturday, extending to 16-0, and then sadly, you know, they lost to Optic. But my God, those guys. Unbelievable. Unbelievable weekend.
And we saw a Needler kill in Halo World Championships. That was fantastic.
Yeah, we did. Who was that? That was that APT?
That was Hook.
No.
That was Hook. Hook.
That was Hook, of course. Hook's the only one that can pull that off.
Hook. DJ Blue is going nuts, man. he saw him pick it up before I did. And he just picked up the Needler. And he has very low ammo in that Magnum. He's going to use it.
Oh,
he's
going to use it. The casters were all over that.
Strongside was on it, man. Yeah.
Mikwin was throwing down some crazy stats this weekend.
Yeah, he had a huge weekend. And we've said it before, but Envy goes as Mikwin goes. If he's playing well, they do well. If he's playing poorly, they do poorly. And I think that's a big part of that 12-0 run was Mikwin. I mean, he had so many huge plays, and when he's going off, you start to see other people on their team raise their level, and you know, it allows Hook to be Hook and do what he does. And it's, I think that's why that team works so well together. they are able to raise the level of each other's play.
Absolutely.
Such a great weekend. It was, congratulations to Optic for winning. I mean, they completely dominated the circuit, and it was like they didn't drop a single, I think they dropped maybe one or two games this weekend. And
I think they dropped two, one to Supremacy and one to Liquid. Is that what it was? Yeah, one to Liquid.
One to Liquid.
Yeah, I mean, they're kind of like, I don't know. I want to talk about how great they were, but I think everyone knows that, and it's not that exciting because they're just so consistent. It's like, if they blow people out, it's like, yeah, I kind of knew that was coming. If other teams do it, it's like, oh man, they had such a huge weekend. They had a huge, huge match. But it's like, yeah, Optic also went on a massive run. You know, they lost two games all weekend. That's unbelievable. Yet here we are talking about Envy's big run. It's just kind of an expectation that everyone has set for Optic Gaming because they're just so good.
Well, I mean, it's Halo 5's dynasty team right now. And so every time they win, it's the expectation. And now the anticipation is, okay, which team's going to topple them? Envy did it in the winter finals, and that got a lot of huge press. And, you know, a lot of people in the Halo community were really digging that. And so now it's just kind of like, okay, does Optic bounce back? Now that they've bounced back, okay, now who's the next team that's going to topple them? So it kind of continues in that, you know, we're jumping on the merry-go-round again, and let's see if anybody else can knock them off.
And Team Liquid actually did really well. Like I honestly was only really looking at the top four teams that were kind of rated already: Optic Gaming, Team Envious, Straight Ribbon, and I guess Team Liquid was technically number four. But like I hadn't really followed Team Liquid before, so just to see him do well was kind of refreshing. See, oh wow, this is actually, and they were the only game, them and Splice were the only two teams to take a game from Optic.
No, Supremacy did on day one.
Or sorry, Supremacy.
Yeah.
But there's just something's got to topple at some point, but right now Optic is just, they're up there. And
they're so businesslike too. Like they just won, you know, Worlds for the second year in a row, $500,000, and they look like they just got done winning a matchmaking game. Just very methodical, very businesslike. I saw a tweet from Lethal about that, and he's like, yeah, we don't get hype because winning's our job. You know, we did our job. So yay, move on to the next thing. It's tough to break the focus of a team like that. I think they've got that on lock. I think they've got the maps and the way the game is played, the meta, so to speak, on lock. And it's going to take a lot to chop them down. And I think teams like Envious and Liquid are on the right path. And hopefully, you know, as they continue to play, that competition continues to get closer.
And I buy the fact that, yeah, it's your job. Okay, I get it. But I think it's just the fact that it's too easy for them. I think they're just so well prepared. They work so hard leading up to these matches that it's just so easy. You look at teams like Envy, you look at EG back in the day when they knocked off CLG. Those teams are super, super excited, super hyped when they take them down, because it's hard, because it's really impressive to do that. And it's impressive to take them down, knock them off in whatever series it was. Obviously, Envy in the fall finals, they took them in two best of sevens back to back, which is absolutely insane all on its own. But the fact that they did it to Optic Gaming, yeah, you got to be hyped about that. But Optic, they win so damn much that it's just, you know, it's an expectation for them. And you know why teams get so excited when they win the World Series, why they win the Stanley Cup? Because it's hard. It's really, really hard. It may never happen again. Optic will win the next tournament. There's not much of a question about that.
And even when they're down, they're not down. This team is not done until that victory screen pops up. And we saw a couple of games of that in the finals where somehow Optic flips a switch after being down by a lot and come back to win in dominant fashion when all seem lost.
Yeah, they always have control. They always understand how to break out of whatever map control the other team is putting on them. They always have the calm demeanor to not continue to get tilted or foolishly run out and get farmed. They don't get pressed into being spawn trapped. I mean, they're just a very, very smart team. They're very well prepared. And when you're prepared, it's a little bit that's a lot a bit easier to be able to combine it with your amazing skill and chemistry and just kind of put it towards those championships.
When talking to Royal One, one of the things that I asked him specifically was what kind of puts their team separate from the others, and what was kind of some of the things that he thought really gave them the edge that they apparently have. And he said a couple of things, one of them being communication and just how they communicate. It's possibly just some of the best communication that's out there. And another thing too is that they play their game. They don't play too much into trying to account for each team specially or specifically. They play their game. And watching that last series with Envious and Optic, it seemed like there were times when Envy would just they would come out of the game really aggressive, and then they would get defensive instead of applying that pressure. And I think Optic Gaming has a good balance. And talking with Royal, you hear it in the interview, if you listen to it, but it seems like they are more consistent in their gameplay, whereas some of these other teams, they're a little more shaky. And I think part of that is maybe the communication that Royal One as a coach has to give to the teammates, and just their ability to apply the same amount of constant pressure on any given situation and keep their cool, keep their heads, really is an advantage. Because I think a lot of these other teams, you see a lot more wavering, where you'll see aggressive moves and then kind of a standoffish, which, thinking of a couple of times where it looks like Envy may have done that, where they pushed out aggressive and then they got a little too defensive, and that's when they got overrun and then started to scramble, and when they scrambled they couldn't keep it up.
Yeah, Optic presses teams and forces them to play their game. You'll notice it really, like you're saying, when Envy was up on the Kali flag 2-0, they were pushing the pace. They were playing their game. But you'll notice whenever Optic turns it around on really good teams like that, they start to force those really good teams to play their own game. And it comes down to everything that you just said, I think.
Someone else has got to get into that mindset. I think other pro teams are going to have to get into the keeping pace, keeping communication solid and unwavering.
I think
and it's that confidence.
And to that point, I think a lot of the teams, once they start getting down, they're down. Looking at several series that went 4-0 this weekend, and I think Crowd Pleasers was probably kind of one of the exceptions. I just don't think they had the skills or maybe the ability to just perform on the level that they needed to perform to get up there. But a lot of these teams, once they start going down, you see a lot of, necessarily despair, but a lot of disheartening faces and discussions.
I think you bring up a great point, especially like with a team like Crowd Pleasers. Crowd Pleasers gets their energy from being loud. I mean, Nated is notorious and has been notorious for years for just being really super loud when he's on stage. And one thing I notice about Crowd Pleasers is when they're winning, they're loud. They start to lose, they start to be very, very quiet. And I think they have a very hard time kind of performing. I think their performance is tied into how hyped they are, how loud they are. And when they start to lose and they start to lose that hype, the skill level, I think there's a correlation with that.
Yeah, I mean, take a look at Nated and Allegiance last year at Worlds. That's exactly what's happened. You know, every time he gets quiet, you know, something's going the other direction, and then they end up on the losing end.
Some team out there has just got to get that solid level of play on lockdown, not waver, whether they're losing or winning a certain match or game mode or map, and keep the cool. It's like, okay, we lost this game, we just play on. Every game is another game, regardless of what the cost is. And that's what it takes to be a professional. And it's almost like some of these pro teams haven't quite reached that, but Optic Gaming, that's where Optic Gaming is. At least that's kind of what it looks like.
Yeah, I think I totally agree.
any final remarks before we wrap up this episode?
Not much, really. I mean, I had a great time meeting you guys out there. I had a great time out at the event, and the level of play that we witnessed was unbelievable. That's the highest level that we've seen so far. I know there was a lot of criticism that still came out after that event regarding pieces of the gameplay that is something that can be saved for another time. But for the current state of the game, that was just unbelievable to watch. And it makes me really excited for summer and fall Pro League and any open event that Halo has coming up this year. Just really excited for the future of Halo. And I think it's really poised to have a great year.
Yeah, I think all the constructive criticism aside, you know, like I said earlier, it was my very first event. I had never been to a live Halo event before. I had an absolute blast, you know, while I was there. I enjoyed the experience for what it was. I enjoyed meeting everybody. I enjoyed meeting Bobcat, and I'm really glad that he was able to finagle some things to get out there and help me out. And, you know, meeting Duststorm and, you know, everybody that I got a chance to just sit and talk with. I mean, I got to talk to the Sims for a half an hour about Halo. I mean, that just blew my mind. The guy's my favorite caster ever. And I'm sitting here one-on-one talking to Sims about Halo. So, I left completely, you know, happy with the weekend, with everything that happened there. Really super looking forward to the next one that I can potentially be able to go to.
That's a good sum up right there.
It's what I do.
So why don't you guys go ahead and plug your podcast, where people can find you, social media stuff, that kind of stuff. And we'll start with Bobcat.
So we are the Delta Halo podcast. You can find us on SoundCloud, iTunes, pretty much any place that you listen to your favorite podcasts. And we release every Tuesday, or as frequently on the Tuesdays as we can. We try to be as consistent as possible. But you can find us on Twitter at Delta Halo Cast. That's all one word. And you can find me personally on Twitter at SGTX Bobcat.
Awesome. Tasman.
All right. Wow, that sounded practiced. I'm just going to try from the top of my head here. So the Bad at Halo show is I try to get it out there every Sunday night, late Sunday night, early Monday morning. So you can start your Monday morning commute listening to my wonderful voice. And that is on iTunes. I also upload it on Podbean, so you can stream it from Podbean, badhalopodcast.podbean.com. I am also on Twitter at Bad Halo Show. I just started a YouTube channel. I've got very little content on there, but if you want to drop by and give it a follow, it's Bad at Halo Show on YouTube. Did I get everything? Oh, every now and then I stream on beam.pro/Bad Halo Show. I think I covered everything right there. And I do want to say, with my now appearance on Podtacular, Podcast Evolved, you guys are slacking. I've got my Halo Bowl bingo card almost full. Podcast Evolved is the next one, and I can shell bingo.
Dang.
All within like the last couple months, by the way. So it's kind of been hectic. My wife is an amazing woman who's very understanding and very supportive, to kind of let me have time to be able to, you know, do my podcast and do other podcasts. And she actually kind of planned the whole trip last weekend as far as getting us a situated hotel room and everything. So she's amazing. I wanted to make sure I said that really loud so that she can hear it from upstairs. And then I'll point her to the Podtacular episode as well, so that way, she can get public acknowledgement for being amazing.
That's awesome.
That's a good move. Yeah.
that's happy wife, happy life.
Exactly. I want to give a huge shout out to ESL for putting on a fantastic event this weekend. Really appreciate the opportunity to go out there and cover it as media and be able to get all the interviews that we got and pictures and being able to hang out with some of my favorite competitive Halo peeps. It's always a pleasure to be out there with them and get to see them. Again, Halo putting on the Halo Championship Series for continuing the esports arena for Halo after all the things that happened before then and between MLG. Just thanks to 343 Industries for continuing to pursue that, even though people necessarily weren't happy with some of the stuff that went down with the venue, but in my opinion, they did an excellent job. The staff that was supporting it was fantastic. So ESL and 343 Industries, I think, did a fantastic job this week. So thank you to them for putting on. Thank you for everyone that helped out from the staff. So Unishek and Tashi for manning up the social media. And then you have all the casters. You have Walshy, Sims, Axeltoss, T-Squared, Ghostayami, and a whole bunch of other ones. Just thank you guys for the amazing production of the stream this weekend and just the overall event for people that were there in person. It was so amazing, so fantastic. It was a pleasure to be there. It was truly an amazing and unique experience. Also, thanks again to Tasman and Bobcat for coming on the show and making their Podtacular debut. Hopefully we will have you guys on in the future.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
You can go over and check out their podcasts, like I said, on iTunes or any other way that you get your podcast feed. And you can also check out the other podcasts of our podcast network. We are part of thepodcast.com, which has shows such as Guardian Radio, Critzcast, Work in Progress, Podcast 76, How to Murder Time, and The Learning Cliff. You can check all those out over at thepodcast.com. You can also check us out on our social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Twitch, YouTube, Discord. If we have it, podtacular.com/whatever it is will take you right there. We're posting some pictures from HCS over the weekend on our Instagram, so make sure you go check them out. And we also have some pictures that will be running through that I took of the venue, of the 405th, and a couple other things that were there over the weekend that I will be posting up here early next week. So by the time you're hearing this podcast, it may be out or at least very close to it. So make sure you check our social medias for that. We also stream on Twitch normally on Tuesdays for our podcast at 9 p.m. Eastern time. And then we also have our Fragment Fridays hosted by Godzilla T starting at 8:30 p.m. Eastern time on Fridays. So make sure you join the fun. We do customs, Warzone, Arena, depending on whatever the lobby is. And I have a feeling this weekend will probably be a little leaning towards Warzone Turbo.
At least for a couple of games until we get tired of getting our butts handed to us.
Hey, it's fun using power weapons and not having to wait.
It is. You're wrong, it is.
So make sure you check it out. Make sure you hop on the train with Godzilla T and community. And also check out our Xbox Club and our Spartan Company, which I believe we have a few spots left in our Spartan Company still. Again, huge thanks to Tasman and Bobcat for coming on the show and discussing some of the Halo World Championship weekend with us. It was a pleasure. And we will see you guys next week. Hey everyone, Dustrum here in the post show. We're doing something a little bit different in this podcast. We normally try to insert the interview somewhere strategically into the podcast, but we had such a great time with Tasman and Bobcat that we kind of forgot to put in a little piece to put these interviews in. But not to worry, we're going to put these in here in the very end of the episode. So if you're listening at this point, then you can listen straight on through for the three interviews that we have. Otherwise, you can go listen to the interviews up on our website or on the podcast feed, wherever you listen to it. And we have three interviews. Like I said, our first one is going to be with Elam Knight, who is the coach of Team Envious, who took home second place. We also have an interview with Straight Rippin', all the team except for APG, and they took home fourth place. And then we also have an interview with coach of Optic Gaming, the Green Wall, Royal One, who took home the championship title for Halo World Championship 2017. So again, you can listen to these separately on the podcast feed or on the website if you want, or you can listen to them all here back to back. So enjoy. All right, we are here at the Halo World Championships day number 2. I am here with Elamite from Team Envious, who just went on a 12-0 game streak through the losers bracket after a defeat yesterday. And you guys were killing it today.
Oh yeah, we took a time out like last night after we had got back from, you know, the event and whatnot, and we just talked, we watched, you know, some of the other games that were going on, and you know, we never lose confidence in our team. We've been in these situations before, and it's just like a routine thing for us at this point. We just don't know why we have to do it to ourselves. That's the main thing. But you know, the team is just playing out of this world today, honestly. Like, we literally, if we had any more matches today, I don't think anybody else would want to play us today at all. They'd rather play us tomorrow for sure. Like, if anything.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you guys had a really good setup. Mikwin's been going crazy this entire weekend.
Man, I am so proud of him. He has been through some stuff behind the scenes nobody knows too much about. And we had him come out to Charlotte and the condos and stuff like that, to the headquarters, and land with the entire team. And, you know, just get that camaraderie back, get on the same page, build that relationships up with the guys, and, you know, handle the business. And he's playing beyond above expectations. Honestly, he's literally stealing the show for sure. But everybody's doing their part, too. So
that's amazing. So tell us a little about that, because we've heard a lot of teams starting to do this strategy of, before any major events, especially something like Worlds, teams are getting together like in cabins or in the each other's houses and landing for up to 2 weeks before an event.
It's super key. You want to be around your teammates if possible. I know a lot of people can't really afford to do that, and some, you know, organizations don't cover that type of stuff, but if you can do it, it's so beneficial, hanging around with your teammates, you know, doing, you know, everything besides Halo as well, like whatever you're doing, going out to go get food together, just team things, building the chemistry in and out of the game. That is the important part. And that's the main reason why a lot of teams focus on getting their players together and in the same room, practicing and grinding together.
Awesome. So for Team Envious, what do you guys do to kind of bond outside of Halo? Because like you mentioned, you do a lot more than just play Halo.
Yeah.
It's like a family experience.
Yeah, we more or less at the apartments, there's other teams there from other games like Gears and COD. We'll go watch movies, hang out with them, go out to eat, you know what I mean? Like, we're doing VR at the office, you know, but mostly playing Halo for the, you know, we're there to play Halo. So, you know, all the other stuff we do outside of Halo would just mainly just, you know, a few other games, movies and stuff like that. Just chilling, talking about Halo. It's Halo no matter where we go. We're probably watching a stream walking out in the street somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, mine is always on Halo.
That's great. And just to see the amount of effort that everyone on the team is putting into this. I mean, I've been watching you guys pretty much all day today, and everyone up there is so intense, and the chatter is so great. This is really cool to see how much has been coming through just today. But what's kind of some of the big things that you guys have identified? I know Mikwin said as we kind of left the stage that one of the things that your team's struggling with right now is strongholds.
Yeah.
What's some of the other things that you've kind of identified over the season that you guys have really worked on, and you think coming to Worlds you've actually done really good at?
Well, Slayers, we kind of slowed down on Slayers before this tournament as well. We were called out on a lot about losing our Slayers, and then we focused up on Slayers and we've been winning our Slayers, but then we kind of dwelled down back on strongholds. And it's kind of a situation where when you try to build something else up, something else kind of attribute kind of goes down, you know what I mean? So you have to go back, kind of keep it balanced on the levels. But one other thing that was struggling was our tone levels, our communication levels, you know, just finding that right balance of good information, getting hype when we need to, and then calming it back down so people can hear the clear information coming to them. You know, that's, we have to play a certain way. We're not like crowd pleasers who have to yell and they get hype and that's how they, you know, they do their thing. We're more calm, cool, and collected, but we get hype when we need to, but then we have to tone that level down. That's what we've been struggling with coming into Worlds, and we've kind of finally found that mesh besides, you know, working on strongholds.
Yeah. Now you come at a different aspect of it because you're a coach for Envious. So what's it that you look at with trying to communicate to everyone that's playing? What's the one thing that you really try to make sure everyone else knows?
I'm the guy who can say and speak freely about things that I see, you know, so it's not just a team going at one person about certain things and whatnot. So I keep them, you know, focused on the next objectives, you know, keep everybody on the same page, obviously keeping up with times. I'm also low key a psychologist as well. I'm helping these guys, you know, mentally stay in the game and mentally, you know, be on the same page with each other. And you know what I mean? And I help translate what teammates are trying to say to other teammates but in the best way possible, you know? So I also manage the team as well. So I'm pretty busy doing a whole bunch of stuff besides coaching on the outside, but a lot of people don't really know that. So, you know, I'm hooking them up with, like, you know, their, you know, the controllers and getting all their stuff situated. And, you know what I mean? I'm like, I do everything for the guys behind the scenes.
That's awesome. As you can hear in the background, a lot of crazy people here today. Yep. I'm sure there's a lot of talent here. And one of the big things for you is you're the one team that's out there, and it's been advertised all over HCS and the Halo Twitter. You're Envious was made to bring down Optic Gaming.
Yes. I mean, that's specifically why we went after the players we did, Snipe Down and Hook. We knew exactly who we wanted to get after Season 1 Finals. And once that was done and we just made a play for it, we knew that our play style and how we played against, you know, a team like Optic, you know, we'd be able to dethrone them. And we did at Season 2 Finals. Now we need to do it again here at Worlds. And we're in the same situation as we were at Season 2 Finals. In the loser's bracket, we're going to have to beat people twice. I don't know if it's going to be Liquid or Optic, but right now I think Liquid and Optic will be playing tonight. So we'll see what happens.
Awesome. Well, you guys fought valiantly today. 12-0 is amazing. Mm-hmm. You guys went to a game 7 last night, but you guys came back and did really well. So yep. We're really looking forward to seeing what you guys can pull out for tomorrow.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
All right, everyone, we're here. Day 2 is wrapping up of the Halo World Championship, and I'm sitting down with Straight Rippin. Got everyone here, minus one. APG is missing in action at the moment, but I've got everyone else here. We've got Hines, Ace, Renegade, and Clutch. So thanks, guys, for sitting down with me.
No problem.
So you guys are into the top 4, which is a pretty good spot to be. We just saw you play out your last match of the day, and you guys have been doing pretty well so far. So how's it been going through with everyone coming out here and with all the international teams for 2017?
It feels great. Especially obviously with John joining the team, it's a huge improvement for us. But from last year, me, APG, and Ace being on the same team at Worlds, having to play against Booba Dooba's team in a single elimination tournament, we went to game 7. We didn't pull it off that time, which is fine because they were a great team. But I do feel like we got a little bit of revenge today.
And I got revenge too.
Yeah. And he actually got dropped from a Splice before the World season started for Shotzi.
Yeah.
Wow.
So a little bit of revenge for all of us. I mean, they're a great team, but it was just nice because double elimination makes stuff like this possible.
Yeah, definitely. Very stressful weekend, I'll tell you. All these game 7s we've been dealing with.
That's the only way we know how to do it.
Yeah. Is that a very intense feeling for you guys, having to do 7 games?
Very intense.
Stressful. Like, the whole series, just not being able to close it out, just it not being over. And you still having to get that one more win and play like that.
I guess
it's
entertaining for everybody else besides us that actually have to play through it.
Yeah, as a human being, it's literally stressful because you can't help those thoughts that go through your mind. Like, if we just win this one game, we're going to win the series. Then next thing you know, it's 3-1 against Crowd Pleasers. Next thing you know, it's 3-2. And it's like, well, if we lose this game, we're about to get reverse swept. But you got to stay composed. And like, we're all veterans and John's mature. So
Sheesh. We
know how to handle it. You're not a veteran.
Dude, I'm a rookie in a bit. I'm joking.
No, you're not. That's not how it works.
You guys can't hear it, but Clutch is laughing over here too. So going into the Final 4 tomorrow, we have you guys, Straight Rippin. We have Optic Gaming, who's the champions from last year. We also have Team Envious and Team Liquid. So what's kind of the strategy that you guys are looking forward to going into tomorrow, knowing that those are the 3 other teams that you have to go up against, which is the top 4 currently ranked teams?
Yep.
I'd say coming into this tournament, we're the 4 seed.
Ladder.
These three teams that we are going to have to play are the seeds 1, 2, and 3. So coming into this tournament, we knew if we wanted to advance further in the rankings and win this thing, that we're going to have to go through these teams. So it's no surprise to us that they're still here on Championship Sunday, and we're excited to play them.
Yeah, shout out to those teams too, though. I mean, this whole season, it's been these are the top 4 teams. We had a little mishap at Vegas, but we knew if we played Crowd Pleasers again here, we would beat them, and we did. And it's pretty cool that there's an established top 4 and we're a part of it. Definitely something to be proud of.
That's awesome. So a little bit non-HCS stuff, because everyone does have lives outside of HCS. What do you guys like to do when you're not playing Halo? How do you guys bond as a team?
How do we bond as a team? Usually just joke with each other. I mean, honestly, people keep asking in interviews about life outside of Halo, but for the past 3 months, our life has just been Halo. Well, that's what it takes. That's what it takes to get to where we are right now. And we still even have some more like stuff to do. So we still need to put more work in, even though we've been dedicating our entire lives to it for the past 3 months.
So how long do you guys see yourself playing in competitive Halo? I know we have the reigning FFA champion over here, Mr. Ace.
Yeah. How long do I see myself playing? Probably until I know that I can't win anymore, because I still feel like, you know, that...
You got to have that belief that you can do it.
Me or, you know, the team also could be the best in the world. It is the best in the world at the time. So that's really what keeps us, you know, or me into it, at least personally, is that knowing that, like... You know, you can actually play the best and win matches if you just do what you need to do.
Yeah, for me, I mean, I almost retired before the season, but I felt like I still had too much skill to just hang it up right then and there. I figured I'd give it at least one more shot. And throughout the season, like, just the way my team's been playing, how fun it is to play with these guys and how supportive people have been makes me want to just keep playing for as long as I can. I mean, I never want to, like, leave this Halo community, so I'll definitely play, as like Aaron said, until I feel like I can't really compete anymore.
For me, like, I'm young. I just started playing, but it's for the fun of it. Like, I enjoy playing Halo because it gives me that adrenaline rush that makes me want to, like, keep playing and keep playing. But until, like, I just don't find the fun of it anymore, it will probably be when I stop playing. And
that's another thing. Like,
there's an addiction to...
No, I need something in my life to compete for. Like, I played sports when I was younger. When I realized I was pretty good at Halo, I was like, okay, that's what I'm going to do now. And I always wonder when I do finally retire, what's going to be that thing in my life to compete for?
I was going to say that there's definitely, I mean, you get a little bit of taste of it after you win series and stuff, but there's a small span of time that's kind of like a really good feeling after you win, you know, and then especially if you win the tournament, it's
like that tenfold. Feeling we have right now.
It's literally tenfold. So that's what I want this weekend, is that feeling of winning the tournament. That addiction. It's almost like an addiction.
That's a great point. Yeah, it's a great point. We get little teases of how it feels to win an event after you win a big series, but you know there's more work to be done. That's where we are right now.
Wins are really big. Speaking of it, here comes AVG too. So how do you guys find all the events that we have for HCS? So especially something like this. I mean, I remember coming to ESL for the very first Halo event back in 2014 and it being just a small part of the studio. But as we've seen HCS move on over the years, the venues have been getting better, the production has been getting better. How's that come across from your guys' perspective?
I feel like there are pros and cons to both the ESL events and then the non-ESL events. The ESL events are by far the best run events you'll ever attend. Everything's ahead of schedule. You know when you have to play and it goes really smoothly, but it's at a venue that's not open. And that's where the other side of it comes in with open lands. When you get to experience like the teams that are playing for top 24 and top 64 and just are there to compete. They might not expect to win it all, but they still want to be a part of the community and play. And I love being a part of those events because the crowds are just crazy at those events. Like Vegas and St. Louis are really fun for me this year.
Yeah, I feel the exact same way. I can't really think of anything to add. It's HS has been growing lately, you know, the last few years, and it feels, you know, I don't think anyone's pleased. There's always, you know, people trying to constructively criticize it so it gets better and bigger. But, you know, it takes time and it takes work from everyone involved, and we just all hope for it to be bigger.
What would you guys like to see in 2017-2018 circuit? Same stuff? Anything more to improve on?
I'm excited to see what DreamHack has to bring to the table for Halo. That's something Halo's never been a part of, so I think they're going to do great. So I want to see where that goes first. I do always appreciate the people at ESL and HCS and what they do, but there are definitely other options you might want to see in the future, like maybe MLG could throw their hands back in. But honestly, you just got to see how DreamHack does first.
Me personally, I've always been a big fan of live amateur events, giving people a reason to show up and compete, even when they know that it's just for the love of the game. They're not actually, a lot of them aren't there to win. That's something that we've been lacking here in the scene in the past couple of years, is just multiple live, large amateur events. Because that makes the live crowd, after they get knocked out, so much bigger and heavier and more interested in the matches. Because a lot of these people that come that play online and compete that don't get to show up to this tournament are the same people that could be in the stands making the environment
exactly
so much better than what it is.
Definitely.
So for a lot of the amateur teams and especially the international teams, we saw all the international teams get knocked out. They were all the first ones out, unfortunately, this year. But what's kind of some of the stuff that you see up and coming from either the international teams or the amateur teams that maybe something new that will kind of help get other teams into the limelight with Halo? Or is there anything that you...
To be quite frank, I feel like the international teams are at a disadvantage because of the way online works. You can't practice against NA teams, so their practice is never going to be top tier, and it kind of shows how their ceiling is a lot lower than NA teams. There are definitely a lot of up-and-coming North American players, though. I mean, even Renegade last season, we had him sub for us a little bit. We realized how good he was, and we picked him up, and you see people like Shotzi and Falke and Denoxide. I
mean, you got to look at it like this. Everyone sitting at this interview was once one of those kids.
Exactly.
That showed up to these tournaments and was an amateur and was there for fun and just trying to place well, and just trying to become a semi-pro or a pro. And, I mean, the belief that that was possible is the reason that we showed up to these things.
Exactly.
So, who's to say who's the next kid that's going to fill our shoes?
Mm-hmm. Well said.
So, I'll leave this to one last question because I know we just passed the 10-minute mark, but if we're going into tomorrow's final day, what's the one thing that you guys are looking forward to coming out and having a present mindset? That W.
Winning.
Man, I just want to win. I've been playing Halo nonstop for the last year, just doing all these online tournaments, all these LAN tournaments, and I've never won. I just want to see how that feels like. And Ace, Hines, and APG, they all have won an event before, so...
I've won events. They have one
okay.
Event.
Fair enough. All right. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having us on.
Best of luck tomorrow.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is day 3 of the Halo World Championship 2017, and I am sitting down with Royal One, coach of Optic Gaming, the Green Wall itself.
Yeah.
Thanks for being on Potacular.
Thanks for having me.
You guys are poised right now for... You won the winner's bracket. You're set for the grand finals, guaranteed number 2 spot. And you're going into the finals. We're watching the loser's bracket right now. We have Straight Rippin going against Team Envious. But you guys have been just going it strong the whole tournament. I think you've only dropped maybe 1 or 2 games the entire tournament.
Yeah.
And being Challenger Gaming last year, you won the championship then. So you're the reigning championships coming into this. How does that make you feel, and how's that good confidence booster for the team coming into this series?
I think for us, it's nice. Like, we know that we've done it before. We can do it again, so we have what it takes to win. I'd say there's a little bit more pressure, though, just because we kind of have, pressure on ourselves, because we don't want to downgrade, right? Like, you only want to improve, and from winning, that's really all you can do after that. So I'd say there's a little bit more pressure on ourselves internally. Also, would be really nice to win a world championship under the Optic organization, just because we haven't, I guess, had a chance to compete for a world championship for them yet. So being able to win under the Optic brand would be really awesome. And it does put a little bit of extra pressure on us, but it's nothing we're not used to.
Right. You mentioned before the whole idea of you're a winning team, but you want to keep getting better. So what are some of the things that you guys have worked on as a team to, like, fill any gaps that you may have had since last year, or just get overall better at certain maps or game modes?
I'd say if you watch any of our streams, or I think, like, if you see, like, TJ or Brad's streams, we're really, we take time to, like, break down our games after every single game during a scrim. So you'll probably see, like, PJ talking a lot after a game, saying, like, even if we win, I think first thing, let me backtrack, is when we win, we're never just like, okay, we won, sweet, that's it, let's move on. Even if we win a game like 50-5 in Slayer or something like that, we're still going to go back and say, like, okay, we could have done this better, we could have done that better. We do a really good job of pointing out our flaws, no matter, like, if we win by a lot, if we lose by a lot, and being able to say, like, okay, we need to work on this. So I think we do that really well in scrims. Like, after every single game, we talk about it, so it's fresh in our heads. And we do a good job after the scrim as well. Like, we usually take about 20-30 minutes kind of, like, recapping the scrim, being like, okay, this is what we noticed, like, we need to work on tonight. This is what we should work on the next day, kind of thing. I think that's what separates us from a lot of the other teams is we like proactively critique our gameplay and like basically roast each other on what we need to do better in order to fix it like immediately. We don't let problems linger. So I think that's what separates us.
What are some of the things that you guys really focus on when you're playing against other teams? So we have a lot of the predictions out there from the casters or have you and Invious in the top two spot, but Team Liquid has been showing up a lot this event. So are there certain tactics that you use against certain teams or do you employ the same kind of tactics for each game mode based on your team dynamic?
I think our main focus is playing our game because we know it works for us. But we definitely, like when we play against certain teams, we kind of know that they have certain tendencies. Like for instance, like a team like Liquid or something would be a lot more aggressive than a team like EG or something that plays like a more standard play style. So we take that into consideration, but I think we mainly focus on our own game, but because we feel like if we play our play style and like the way we know we play, we control the pace of the game and it forces the other team to play reactive. So that's kind of our mindset when we play.
Now, being as a coach, you play a distinct role, and I've talked to a lot of other coaches already throughout some other interviews I've done. What's kind of the thing that you really focus on that maybe some of the other teammates, when they're is in the game and they're focused, that you have to just constantly remind them of, watch this area or watch power-ups? Like, what's the thing that you really focus on to help them make their gameplay a lot better?
For me, I take pride in my coaching abilities is the communication aspect. Because like every coach can do times, can do the basics of coaching. But I think the really key thing that separates a good coach from a mediocre coach is you have to understand your teammates. Like you have to know, okay, like I have a teammate who maybe doesn't communicate as much as they should. You kind of fill in for that, right? Luckily I'm pretty blessed. I have a pretty good team, so they don't need a whole lot of fine tuning, but I offer a lot of communication. Like for us, like when we're in a game like Slayer, for instance, one problem that we have is we don't know when to like pump the brakes or like stop going so aggressive. So that's like one thing I do all the time when we play is I'm like, okay, like let's slow the pace of the game down. Let's set up kind of thing. So it's not really like making play calls, but it's I ask a lot of questions. Like I talk to them in game. Like it's almost like we have a conversation when we play. So I asked him, like, should we be setting up here? Should we be being aggressive? Like, do we want to push? Do we not want to push? I think the communication part is what I take pride in. I think is what separates a good coach from a mediocre coach is being able to talk to your team and like figure out what to do on the fly without like just being the one sole voice, like, hey, you have to listen to me kind of thing.
So how's the dynamic like? Because you're the brother of Royal too. So it's like, it's an interesting dynamic of a player and a coach that are actually relatives. So how does that play into the dynamic of the team?
I mean, honestly, I don't even know. Like, it's just another, like, he's my brother, but like, we're with each other all the time. It's just like, he's just another person to me. Like, that sounds really weird to say, but it's like, it's just like a normal, like everyday thing. Like we live in the same house. He plays in a different room. I play in a different room. So it's almost like he might as well could be like across the planet from me kind of thing. So, but no, it's not that different. The dynamic is, it's fun because like I get to share all the moments with my brother, which is pretty cool. Like when we win together, it's really nice. Like we get to travel together and all that stuff. So that aspect of it is cool because I get to do it all with my brother. But the team dynamic of it is, it's just like, he's just another guy I'm fist bumping during the game, another guy I'm telling to go get camo or something like that. So I don't treat him any differently than anybody else.
I guess that has its pros and cons, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So this is another aspect I guess we don't really hear of much, because there's still the whole like media and old, and I guess older people that haven't been as privy to games just like see games as like a waste of time.
But
like, how's the family support? I mean, your brothers, you and Royal too, but
exactly.
Outside of that, what's the family support like for a pro team like this?
So right now it's amazing. But I guess if you were to go back about 10 or so years ago, where, like when we first started competing, it was kind of like iffy. Like when we're from Canada, so the scene wasn't too big in Canada when we first started. So we were going to like local tournaments and kind of winning those. But my parents were still kind of like, I don't know about this whole gaming thing. It seems kind of sketchy. Like, what do you mean you're going to fly to the US and play for money? Like, are they going to pay you? Is this legit? So, and then like once you started competing and like actually winning and showing that like, okay, I'm really good at this, and like there's legitimate tournaments and legitimate like prize money involved in this. And my parents, like they're really reasonable people. They caught on quick and they're like, wow, like this is something you can do as a career. and they've been so supportive. Like, my dad's actually here this weekend watching. He flew down.
That's awesome.
All my family is at home. Like, my grandparents, aunts, uncles are, they crowd around a TV and watch us every tournament. So they love it. It's like watching like football or soccer or something for them. Like, they love it. So
that's awesome. So were you always interested in the competitive aspect of Halo, or was there something else that Halo drew you in?
It's strictly competitive. Okay. For us, we started off, well, I guess we started off playing in, well, geez, we've been playing for a while. Me and him have been playing since probably like beginning of Halo 2. It started off as like casual playing with friends, and then it got to the point where it's like, okay, I need to beat my friends down the street. Now I need to beat this, I need to win this local tournament. Okay, now I need to win this like national tournament. Now I need to win this MLG kind of thing. So it's, me and my brother are really competitive people. We always have been. Like, we grew up playing sports and stuff like that. So when we do things, we do them to win. And if we don't win, it really like pisses us off kind of thing. So I'd say it's like 98% competitive and 2% for like the fun of it. We're pretty intense when we play. We save the fun stuff for games like H1Z1 and nice. You know, those kind of games.
So you have a little bit of breath to your
exactly. Gaming. We're not just robots. We don't just scrim and practice 30,000 hours of the day. We scrim. We do what we need to do, and we still enjoy other games and stuff like that. Yeah,
that's awesome. So going into the finals, what's the one thing that you guys are trying to focus on, making sure that you guys just tighten up on so you can secure that victory today?
I'd say it's our communication. I feel like our core gameplay of our team is really solid. Like, we shoot really well. Our teamwork is really good. It's our communication that really like will set us apart if we're having like a really good day or a really bad day. You can kind of see that in our gameplay sometimes too. Like, when we drop games, it's usually because our communication is not as on point as it could be. So I think as long as we like tighten up our comms, our small talking really well, I think we should be able to play our game and do what we've been doing all season.
That's awesome. Well, best of luck to you. We have a little bit of a loser's bracket to watch, but you guys are poised for at least second place, and you guys are in a really good spot for first.
Thank you.
Good luck on taking home the championship today.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.